This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Cedarside. Cedarside's original 100% organic insect spray kills bed bugs, mosquitoes, fleas, ticks, mites, scorpions, roaches, and more, but is completely safe for your home, pets, and family. Go to cedarside.com, use coupon code Hoffman at checkout for free shipping, or call 800-842-1464 and mention you heard it here. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and it is once again time for our weekly Q&A with Layla, which means you get to pose your questions about anything related to health and medicine. You can email your questions to radioprogram@AOL.com. And Layla, I just checked our ratings on iTunes. By the way, those of you who like to listen to the podcasts, please go up to iTunes. And there's a place where you can review the podcasts. And I was just very, very pleased with the reviews. We had 10 reviews, which is moderate number of views. I mean, some of the podcasts have dozens and scores of reviews. Some have one or two. We have 10, so we're going to average. And we're 5 out of 5. I mean, everybody, it's on a 1 out of 5 rating scale. And everybody rated a 5, and we just got these wonderful positive reviews, which I'm very proud of.
That's terrific. Yeah,
it's very gratifying. Because, look, we're putting it out into the ether, so to speak. So we sit here, and, we're sitting there. We don't have, live audience, applause.
We're having a conversation that we would have almost on a daily basis about
exactly. The
case or something.
But people are enjoying it. And we had one of our faithful listeners came up to see us from Savannah, Georgia. So we're very happy to hear that people far and wide are enjoying this information. So great. All right. So I'll start. We'll get to questions in just a moment. But I want to run this by you as a professional nutritionist. The article is entitled "Fancy a Tasty Bite." Clever headline, because it's spelled B-Y-T-E. Cookbook written by artificial intelligence.
Oh.
Okay, Watson the computer, the IBM computer that famously beat the chess champions and went on to win at Jeopardy, okay?
Well, right.
Now it's Chef Watson. All right? Yeah, seriously. It comes up with some kind of weird recipes sometimes, weird combinations. Here's one. The surprising results include the Spanish almond crescent, a butterless and sugar-free pastry flavored with pepper, saffron, and coconut milk. That sounds interesting, but, Also, get this one. Asparagus grilled with pig's feet croquettes and mustard foam. You wouldn't think to combine those things. An apple and pork kebab cooked with mushrooms.
I taste that.
Here's one. Ale brewed with, with veal stock.
Well, you've heard of cooking your bratwurst or your knockwurst in beer.
Yes.
So that's
so why not drink your brat first? Drink your bratwurst, right?
Yeah.
another one, plum pancetta cider. Flavored with pancetta.
Pancetta,
yeah.
Wow.
And check this out.
I try any one of those. I try anything, actually.
And a bacon dessert made with porcini mushrooms, walnut meal, and dried figs. Now, anything made with bacon, that's going to... But, it's a little weird putting it into
a
dessert.
There's bacon-flavored ice cream now, So they're putting bacon everywhere. There's a bacon-flavored vodka. Oh, my goodness.
There's also a bacon candle that you can light, where you can get the bacon aromatherapy
Sunday morning breakfast.
I hate to say this, but it's actually true. There is actually bacon-flavored feminine hygiene products.
Ew.
Okay. But,
why?
I guess if they're strawberry, they got to offer a lot of, it's 31 flavors, whatever.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Anyway.
Well, I want to know, can Watson be cloned and can he come to my house to cook? I'll try any of those recipes.
I'm thinking, cloned is not necessary. You can just get maybe a subscription to Watson. And just like, you know, you can subscribe to, you know, Google, you can subscribe to, you know, Apple iTunes. You might be able to just go online and maybe for a small subscription fee, you know, just plug in, I want to make a dessert consisting of this, this, this. And then Watson comes back at you with maybe an original suggestion for dessert. You know, just try to stump Watson. You can't. Watson cannot be stumped. If you say, I want a dessert made out of strawberries and pig's feet and grasshopper flour, you know, Watson will come up with it.
Stump the Watson.
Right.
Wow.
So anyway, I don't know. I mean, the problem is, though, I got to say that, you know, when I cook, it's a lot of it is sort of instinct, seat of the pants, you know, and I have a little bit of a feel for it. If people say, well, you know, write down all your recipes. Well, I don't know. I don't really follow recipes that much. I use recipes as sort of a guideline.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think taking away that human element.
You know, vaguely.
You know, when I make rice or something like that, I want mushy rice. I really need to measure because it's hard to eyeball it.
Right.
But you know,
right.
It's like, you know, like a pinch of this. You know, a dash of that.
A tablespoon of this that should fit into the palm of your hand.
A palm. And that's what I did today. I made a soup today where I felt like making a colorful spring soup. So what I did was I got some chicken tenders, and I mean, not the prepared kind, but like they're called chicken tenders.
Right, it's right. They're called
they're skinless.
Tenderloin. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then I grilled them, or, you know, just browned them, and I sautéed onions and carrots and celery. And actually, I'd had a chicken the other day, so I just took all the chicken bones and I threw them in a pot and I made the broth. So
nice.
I had I had real chicken broth, not prepared chicken broth. So I had my own chicken broth. It's been sitting there in the crock pot for 2 days, so it's a nice, rich broth. You know, I added that to the mixture. I sautéed some onions. I sautéed some mushrooms, threw that in. I got a can of cannelloni beans. I draw the line at sometimes cooking beans takes a long time, and they're still hard. So I got prepared beans, threw that in. I got a can of, it's like a new product. It's grilled whole tomatoes, but in a can, canned.
Oh, okay.
And
they're like the fire roasted tomatoes.
Yeah, like fire roasted tomatoes.
Yeah.
And then I threw that in and added some water and chopped some Swiss chard into that. So it's green, it's red, it's got the chicken, you know, chunks
colors
floating around in it, the white beans floating around in it. And it's sort of like, you know, it makes me happy.
It makes you happy. That's it.
I had it for lunch.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So that's what I do on my day off. Mm-hmm. All right. So let's begin. I don't want to take up too much time because we have a lot of questions this week. What are some of the questions we have?
Let's see. We've got a question from Michelle.
Oh, I'm sorry, but I got to, you know, full. Yeah. I did throw in some oregano and some thyme, you know, and salt and pepper, you know, and a couple of bay leaves.
And good.
Yeah.
Lovely. Garlic.
Garlic. I sautéed garlic.
Garlic with the everywhere, onion. Yeah.
A lot of garlic. Yeah, it had to be garlic.
Yeah,
so it's like
good.
A little bit of Italian kind of flavor, I figure.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
Wonderful. This question's from Michelle. I would like to ask Dr. Hoffman about why I got this rash. I quit all grains and legumes. I lowered my carb intake to about 45 grams a day. 1 month later, I woke up with the rash that was very itchy and it had vesicles. There's this website called the Keto Rash, and apparently this is a problem for some people on the diet. So what do I do about this? So this rash, otherwise known as the Keto Rash.
Keto, ketosis.
Ketosis.
Maybe you can look back a little and explain what ketosis entails.
Ketosis is the fat-burning metabolism where the body, other than using glucose, is now using the byproducts of fat burning, which are ketones. So being in a state of ketosis means you're on a low-carb diet and you're burning primarily fat for energy. So apparently there's a minority of people who are getting this ketone rash.
So, I mean, if it's on the Internet, it means that it's a phenomenon. It's not just an isolated, coincidental kind of thing.
Yeah. And apparently this rash, its name is prurigo pigmentosa.
And, you know, since I speak medicalese, I'll tell you what that means. It means itchy pigmented rash, and that's about it, and it doesn't tell you anything about excuse me, the origins of the rash, just a characterization of the rash.
I wonder what's going on there, because this is the first time I've heard of it in all my years administering a low-carb diet.
Me too. And you've been around the block because you worked at Atkins. You worked with a lot of people putting them on a ketogenic diet. So, I don't know.
I wonder if there's something else going on.
Yeah.
Whether it's they're eating foods that they normally don't eat and they're allergic.
Right. And when I hear vesicles, by the way, I mean, that's very characteristic of a shingles rash. But apparently, you know, this person knows it's not shingles, or it's not extremely painful, or maybe got a diagnosis from a doctor. But shingles rashes have vesicles or little tiny bubbles, but they're also very itchy, very painful. And can leave, even when they heal, can leave some residual nerve pain. So anyway, so what happens, I mean, in holistic medicine, we often term this a detox reaction. You know, things, buried toxins come to the surface, they're released via saliva, breath, sweat, feces, and they come to the surface of the skin. So that would be sort of a holistic explanation of that, but so I'm not sure. And I'm not sure that's a bad sign. That's a sign that the diet is not suitable. It's just maybe a sign that the person's going through some changes.
Yeah, just reading some of these anecdotes. Generally, the person would then introduce more carbs, and the rash would get better.
Right.
And as long as their ketones go down, the rash goes away.
Right.
So. Wow.
So, are you getting from this webpage that the rash persists as long as they stay in ketosis?
On one particular, this is from BJJ the Caveman.
The Caveman,
These
people take on, like, these little monikers. He's like, the Caveman. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Also on Mark's Daily Apple mentioned it, so I thought it was worth looking into.
Okay.
Very, very interesting. Wow.
Okay.
We're going to have to continue to look at that to see what we can find out.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for your question, Michelle.
Yeah, interesting issue.
Yeah. Okay, our next question is from Bo. Hello, Layla and Dr. Hoffman. My wife, who's 35 years old, was diagnosed with acute myeloid leukemia back in June. She spent a month at Sloan Kettering, then had chemo. She was given a good prognosis. She's back to work. Her blood tests are normal. Is she a good candidate to get vitamin C drips for this? Could it help to prevent a relapse?
And the answer is maybe. I think we, the person to ask would be Jeannie Drisco, who's doing some of the best research in the country on intravenous vitamin C with malignancies. And, you know, cancer is very heterogeneous. So while lung cancer and skin cancer and acute myeloid leukemia all share the rubric cancer, they may respond differently to intravenous vitamin C. I've not personally treated anybody with AML with intravenous vitamin C. I can't see where it would be harmful. But, you know, I'm not sure that it would be a suitable preventive or even a treatment of AML. I'm pretty sure that intravenous vitamin C alone is not a panacea for AML, which is a serious type of cancer that I would treat. At this point, I would treat conventionally, I got to say, because there's certain cancers where I would opt for natural therapy because conventional therapy has such a poor track record. But, you know, the conventional therapy put this person into remission, which is encouraging.
Yeah, yeah, which is good news. Back at work and everything.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you, Bo, for your question, and best of luck to your wife.
By the way, I just really saw there's some really interesting developments occurring in cancer, and I'm not saying that, because all too often over the past decades, since Nixon launched his war on cancer in 1972, remember, that's like, what is that, like 50 years ago or more. That was supposed to
42,
be like...
42, 43,
like
the, yeah.
It's the space launch, right?
Uh-huh.
And we conquered the moon and we're going to conquer cancer. Well, that was a little bit facile. And some people point out that while we're doing a lot better in terms of cancer survival, part of that is because we're detecting cancer much earlier. So the cancer that we wouldn't have discovered in 1950, we're discovering and the person's surviving. but that means that they may have had a very minor cancer, very small cancer, and not that the treatment was successful in helping them survive. They wouldn't have died of this cancer anyway. So, however, we are making progress in some few areas of cancer with just very remarkable progress in cancers that were inevitably fatal. And recently there was a documentary that I recommend that people see. I read the book, mm-hmm. and I always watch the documentary. It's called Cancer, Emperor of All Maladies. It's a book by Siddhartha Mukherjee. He's a doctor. He's an oncologist. And he's also the narrator of this documentary, which is by these famous documentarians who do all what's their name? Ken Burns.
Oh yes, the Civil War series.
Right,
yes.
Right. He tackled this, and it's very well done. It kind of gives the history of how we've dealt with cancer over the ages, and how we've made some real wrong turns, and how we've sort of underestimated cancer, but also some very ingenious ways that we're now approaching cancer that's starting in some ways to come together with less harsh therapies, immunotherapy.
Thank goodness.
There was a 60 Minutes thing, which I think was a little bit jumping the gun. It was basically how they're using the measles virus to kill cancer. They actually inject the measles virus into brain cancer. You have to be very careful with that, because too much can give you a terrible case of measles. Or alternatively, you can miss the cancer, and then it doesn't work. So you have to actually do targeted injection of measles into the cancer, and it's a modified measles. You can't just take somebody coughs on a tissue and sop it up and direct it into the brain. It has to be a specially prepared measles vaccine that's modified in such a way that it attacks the cancer.
But can't measles cause dementia and blindness?
No question. I mean, there were, for some people who take this therapy, they have terrible side effects. So it's they haven't quite nailed it, but they have actually some survivals of deadly brain cancer. And then conversely, they've actually used other viruses, the flu virus. They've used the chickenpox virus. They've even thought of harnessing a kind of an attenuated form of the HIV virus. The HIV virus being, of course, deadly, but they sort of defang it, modify it, and target cancer with it. And that's some of the directions. And, immunotherapy is using monoclonal antibodies to shut off certain reproductive pathways of the cancer. And they're getting closer to making cancer possibly, and that's, I don't think we're necessarily going to have the magic cure, but making it a chronic disease which can be managed.
Yes, rather than having to hit it with everything and almost kill the patient.
Right, much like HIV is managed. I mean, these days, most people, they develop health problems. They may be plagued with problems, even side effects from drugs, but they rarely die of HIV directly anymore. Mm-hmm. But it's a great, they have to be very diligent about taking a cocktail of medications.
Right. Antiretroviral.
They have to see super specialists who read up every day on all the different ramifications of treatment. Cancer is infinitely more complicated than just a viral disorder. And it's so heterogeneous. It's not just one disorder. It's a multiplicity of disorders. And cancer cells mutate very rapidly. And that's the problem, is that you can cure cancer, seemingly knock it back, achieve a remission, but then it sometimes comes roaring back in a form that's very resistant. And that's a challenge.
Much like viruses, huh?
Right. Bacteria and viruses, the same idea, is that, we're coming up with ever more powerful antibiotics, but ultimately we may run out of ammo. Anyway, so I just thought to trigger a little discourse on cancer, and I'm not going to give you like a magic natural protocol for AML. We actually did a podcast with a really expert person in the field of cancer, Lise Alschuler, last week. I recommend that you check it out.
She's wonderful. She's
wrote The Definitive Guide to Cancer, which I recommend very highly. It's a great book. And she also has a lot of great cancer resources. So check out that podcast. She has websites, and she's constantly doing research on things that are important related to cancer and developments. They're scientifically based, and not just folklore, like drink this herbal root, and because they, used to do that in the Amazon jungle, and the folklore says that it cures cancer. Well, no, you have to really subject this to science.
I heard Lee Zeltschuler on the Prosperous Practitioner Summit, mm-hmm. which was a series of webinars, and her particular presentation was wonderful on how she started to teach in groups and then set up her private practice and is seeing a lot of cancer patients. I believe she's based in Arizona.
Yeah, top notch. And so check out the
wonderful
podcast. I think you'll enjoy it. All right, we have time for one short question. Do we have a short one in the pile?
Kind of. This one comes from Lee, who's right. concerned about his blood pressure. His systolic runs anywhere between 125 and 140, averaging about 130, but he's concerned about his diastolic, which is consistently below 80, running from 70 to 78.
And that's a problem?
Yeah, that's not a problem. He's wondering, what are the reasons for the low reading? I'm in good condition. I exercise four hours a week.
He's thinking that having a low reading that's 70 to 78 is a problem?
Yeah.
No, I think he's mistaken because... Yeah. You know,
you want a reading like that, Lee.
That's a very desirable reading.
Absolutely.
But also, you know, blood pressure is one of those things that you have to look at the context. And if you know, somebody with borderline blood pressure might very much be in need of blood pressure lowering medication because they've had a stroke or they're very high risk for worsening kidney disease or mm-hmm. they've just had a heart attack. Those are people who need really very aggressive management, just like you know, some people who really have advanced heart disease, they might actually require a statin. You know,
yeah.
We don't hold that back. Mm-hmm. But somebody who is otherwise healthy, they may have. I'm talking about someone with a borderline blood pressure. Maybe their blood pressure is not perfect. It's 135 over 85, and that might be considered
yeah.
a little too high for someone who's at high risk. But for someone who's otherwise healthy, that would be fine.
Yeah.
You know, so we have to look at the, not just the
70,
blood pressure.
75 is good. Yeah.
Don't just look at the blood pressure. Look at the person who has the high blood pressure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a 68-year-old male. Okay.
Yeah. Well, it's not
All
a
right.
problem. It's not a problem.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what we can see sometimes is we can have patients who have high blood pressure and they take blood pressure medication and their blood pressure gets really low. And the doctor says, that's great. Your blood pressure is really low. But the person says, yeah, but I'm like always weak and woozy. And I just feel like, you know, I feel like hitting the deck and, you know, my head's swimming. And that's a person who's overtreated. And you can actually have cognitive problems and you can have balance problems. And you can feel really poorly if you're overtreated. But that's a person who's treated with excessive
yeah.
blood pressure medication.
Yeah. Wow.
Yep.
All right, Lee, thank you for your question.
Indeed. All right, so
yeah.
this is a logical point at which to pause, because we divide these podcasts into two parts, and we will resume with part two for those of you who wish to join us. And give us a preview, part two, please.
Part two is stem cell and organ regeneration mm-hmm. using stem cells. Is it ready for prime time?
Great question. I'll tackle that in part two with you, Layla.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Dr. Ron Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla Session. Remember, you can send us questions to radioprogram@aol.com. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.